Hi and welcome to Razor's Edge on 2SER 107.3, Sydney's local and independent current affairs. I'm Miles Holbrook-Walk. Today on Razor's Edge...
This is the social responsibility of the bike-sharing companies to dispose of unused bikes, but then how about the social responsibility of governments to create proper cycling infrastructure?
We bring you the latest episode of Seeking Sydney, where we took to the streets to ask the question... Where have all the shared bikes gone? Also coming up on Razor's Edge...
It's also a social action campaign that tries to really celebrate the people that live in public housing and sort of campaigns the government to make sure that there is enough public housing built and that people are not pushed to the outer suburbs of cities, that they have a right to remain in the inner city.
We look into Sydney's public housing estates and uncover what the New South Wales government has done or not done to improve living standards of those living in these communities. All that and more coming up on Razor's Edge. But first, earlier this week marked the International Day of Disabled Persons, a day where NGOs, experts and the broader disabled community address issues such as employment, transportation and general accessibility issues in society for people living with a disability. I spoke to Samantha French, a Senior Policy Officer with People with a Disability Australia, about this year's theme of the International Day of Disabled Persons.
International Day of People with Disability is a day that's recognised each year. It was a day proclaimed by the United Nations and it's observed every year on the 3rd of December. And this year's theme was empowering people with disability and ensuring inclusiveness and equality.
How far have we come if we were to look at least the last 10 years, particularly in Sydney, in terms of improving access and accessibility in society?
Look, I definitely think there have been improvements and we've come some way to recognise the benefits, not just to people with disability and their families and associates, but also to the broader community. So, yes, I think there have been gains. Events like the New Year's Eve fireworks, City of Sydney and others have worked very hard, and the disability community have worked very hard at ensuring accessibility to that significant event. In other areas, such as employment, we're still really lagging behind the rest of the world in that area. Still got a long way to go to promote the benefits of employing people with disabilities.
And why do you think that is, that Sydney or Australia broadly is quite a deal behind the rest of the world?
Look, it's not just Sydney, it's the rest of Australia. There's quite a number of reasons. People make assumptions about the capacities of people with disabilities, so I think there's a lot that would be gained by greater promotion of the employment of people with disabilities to not just employers, but the general community. Just strengthen our employment practices in incorporating things like targets and quotas on employing people with disabilities, having greater penalties for not employing people with disabilities. So some countries include tax breaks for companies that employ people with disabilities and also penalties. So I think there's a whole range of ways we could be addressing this.
You mentioned the idea of incentives for workplaces that employ people with a disability, as well as even the idea of installing quotas to make sure that workplaces actually have a diverse workspace. Are there any policies at the moment in the private sector that you know of that are actually taking seriously the idea of improving employment opportunities for persons with a disability?
Certainly. I mean, look, the government has... the Job Access Program, which is provides a range of workplace modifications and other assistance for companies and employers, both public and private sector. They're incentives in that it's to counterbalance and encourage workplace adjustments for people with disabilities, but also counterbalance any perceived or real costs that might incur. So the Workplace Modifications Program, the Employment Assistance Program are really very positive programs for employers. I think it's really about having real people in a real workplace. I always say exposure is the best educator.
Is it the case that we need to perhaps reorient the focus here? Instead of looking at a person's disability, look at what they could offer a workplace. And do you think enough workplaces are doing that, looking at what a person living with a disability has to offer a workplace?
Look, overall, I'd say no, we're not doing enough. Yes, absolutely, we need to be focusing on the capabilities of people with disability. So I think a lot of the time we talk about we want to be accessible, we want to be inclusive. We have laws such as the Disability Discrimination Act. We have standards such as access to transport standards and access to premises standards. We have lots of things in place, and certainly there's a lot of workplace policies and laws regarding not discriminating and provision of reasonable adjustments and so on. But there's certainly more room for looking at, avoiding assumptions about people with disability based on their diagnosis or their disability. What we would encourage is people looking at, look, if you want to be accessible and inclusive, try to identify and address any of the barriers that are in our workplaces.
What are our train stations like in terms of providing access for people?
Oh, great topic. Look, not good enough is the answer. Look, we do have, as I mentioned before, we have laws and we have standards. We have standards for access to public transport, and there's a schedule of compliance that transport providers are supposed to be working towards and are working towards. Full compliance must be met by 2022, which is very unlikely that any state is, it can't be guaranteed that every state will meet that target, and probably unlikely that every state will. So in terms of our train stations, we have a long way to go to ensuring full accessibility to those. And if I can talk about Sydney, yes, Transport for New South Wales is doing a lot to upgrade our stations to ensure full accessibility with the standards. But there's a long way to go, and we don't seem to have, although they have a very good access consultative committee, and I'm one of the representatives on that, and we do meet regularly with state transport providers and discuss accessibility and so on. We're not really involved, or we don't really have a say in which stations get prioritised for upgrades.
And for example, just on that, I know a station very close to where I live is Tempe Station, which is not at all, for example, wheelchair accessible. They've got two very steep staircases to the station itself. Is there a rough number known of how many stations are not currently compliant with that target of having accessible train stations?
There is a number. I couldn't tell you off the top of my head, sorry.
Would it be a rough percentage? I mean, is it a third? Is it a quarter? Is it half?
I think it's only around about a third of our stations would be accessible, if that. They are upgrading all the time. There's quite a lot of work happening at the moment, quite ambitious plans to keep upgrading stations, but there's still major stations like Redfern Station, which is very close to key community services, to universities. It's a growing area, and yet we have no forward date, or we haven't been told of any immediate plans or any plans in the immediate future for the upgrade of that station.
In terms of a take-home message you'd want people to have on International Day of People with a Disability, is there one that your organisation really wants to drive home for people to understand?
The theme for this International Day was empowering people with disability and ensuring inclusiveness and equality. Really, we've focused on a very wide range of disability advocacy and human rights issues. In the area of transport, definitely engaging with people genuinely from very early stages, well, in any area of that, in terms of increasing access and inclusiveness, engaging with people with disability and the representative organisations at the very earliest stages of any planning and development, that we're included in anything about us, is a catch cry of the disability sector, and we continue to push to be included in all aspects of decision-making that will impact on our lives, that inclusion of people with disabilities is a positive for the broader community.
Sam French with People with Disability Australia ending that story. I'm Miles Holbrook-Walk, and you're listening to Razor's Edge on 2SER 107.3.
I am particularly interested in values, the values that we hold and how we express those values. These, to me, are the vital questions.
7 decades of South Africa's history and people captured by one of the world's greatest photographers, David Goldblatt. Photographs, 1948 to 2018. A must-see exhibition at the Museum of Contemporary Art, Australia. Tickets, mca.com.au.
2SER sponsors.
You're listening to Razor's Edge on 2SER 107.3.
If you've been driving through Waterloo any time recently, then you may have spotted the colourful light installation that shines from the windows of the public housing towers. The light installation is part of the campaign We Live Here 2017, a project that gives a voice to those living in Sydney's public housing. Lily Bendyke reports.
As of June 2017, there were over 50,000 applicants on the New South Wales Housing Register, according to the New South Wales Family and Community Services. If you're one of those 50,000 people, you are also expected to wait between 5 to 10 years to get a house in Sydney's inner city. In 2015, the New South Wales Government announced changes to the public housing system. These changes included the redevelopment of the inner city housing estates in Waterloo and Redfern, and an additional 27,000 affordable homes. 4 years on, the government has failed to meet their original public housing targets, and people already living in public housing are questioning the uncertainty of the public housing system. Patrici Chatterjee, a PhD candidate at the University of Sydney, explains why.
So there are a few different reasons behind this. One of the drivers is a desire to transfer public housing to community housing providers. And that's primarily driven by an economic incentive, if you like. There have been cuts to the social housing sector, to public housing, for a number of decades now in New South Wales. And it's a way of offloading some of the costs onto the community housing sector because the state government isn't getting much funding for it.
The New South Wales public housing eligibility criteria concentrates on those on a low income who need support to help them live independently, or those on a low income who have problems finding affordable housing in the private market that is suited to their needs, according to the eligibility for social housing policy. Historically, public housing tenants' voices have been inadequately represented. However, campaigns such as We Live Here 2017 are trying to change this. We Live Here 2017 was originally started as a lights installation on the Waterloo Estate as part of the Sydney City's Art and About project. This project gave tenants lights in their windows to represent how they were feeling about the redevelopment. But more than a year on, tenants are still showcasing these lights, and Claire Lewis, a filmmaker who created a documentary on the campaign called There Goes Our Neighbourhood, believes that the movement has become so much more than an art installation.
It's also a social action campaign that tries to really celebrate the people that live in public housing and sort of campaigns the government to make sure that there is enough public housing built and that people are not pushed to the outer suburbs of cities, that they have a right to remain in the inner city where they currently reside.
Campaigns like this are so important, as Ms. Chatterjee explains after speaking to and attending protests with tenants from these estates, as they are experiencing lots of uncertainty about their living situation.
In Waterloo, there is a lot of anxiety and a lot of uncertainty, partly because this process has now dragged on for 3 years and they're still not entirely sure what their estate is going to look like. The other problem is that they don't have any, or they have little say in what their living circumstances or what their social environments will be like in the future. So it's quite a disempowering process. For instance, a lot of questions were raised about what their houses will look like, how many bedrooms they'll have, when exactly they will have to leave, and, you know, when will they be allowed to return. And, you know, a lot of people there are quite elderly, and that has been particularly unpleasant for them to deal with that kind of uncertainty at this time in their life.
Ms. Lewis believes that campaigns like these are so important as they are putting faces to the numbers.
think I just want people to understand that there's no one type of public housing tenant, that there's a plethora of stories, and that people who are in public housing are extremely diverse and, you know, should be treated with respect and not sort of, you know, not spoken of in sort of general terms.
She also notes that it is important for the community to better understand these issues, as disadvantage can affect anyone at any time, and resources such as public housing are vital.
Your view of public housing, that it's actually a really sort of vital resource that needs to be there for everyone, because you just don't know exactly what cards life is going to deal you, and you may well be in a position yourself where you require subsidised housing at some point in your life, and it's not a them and us situation. It's very much a group of houses that is subsidised for people that need it, and it should be invested in as such.
Local filmmaker Claire Lewis, ending that report by Lily Bendike.
This is Razor's Edge on 2SER 107.3.
I am particularly interested in values, the values that we hold and how we express those values. These, to me, are the vital questions.
7 decades of South Africa's history and people captured by one of the world's greatest photographers, David Goldblatt. Photographs, 1948 to 2018. A must-see exhibition at the Museum of Contemporary Art, Australia. Tickets, mca.com.au.
2SER sponsors.
Thanks for listening to Razor's Edge on 2SER 107.3. Razor's Edge is produced on Gadigal land of the Eora Nation. And if you liked the show, catch us again next week on Thursday nights from 7:30 p.m. or on our website at 2ser.com. I'm Miles Holbrook-Hawke. Tune in next week.
I'm over it, let go. A two-bit kid, only the best. A two-bit kid. Sin, boy, one.
is sometimes trying to just get back. When you get broken down again, it ain't because you didn't try. I try to count the days that I've been disappointed. So many hard times, it gets disjointed. But it's hard trying to make a living when you get down again. And you just keep giving. Every time I get up, something come and bring me down. I get so low sometimes. To make my way, but it wasn't enough. Desire burns when your dreams are close to dust. I'm begging for the man to live his dark. But the hardest part is starting from the start.